I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Manchester United have a new goalkeeper, a new midfielder, a beautiful new kit, and they're safe standing in the Stretford End. A lot has changed, but not so much here. Welcome to the ninth series of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast with me, Harry Robinson and Jack Tate. Thanks for tuning in again. On today's episode, we start by discussing what Andre Onana will bring to United. With some reflection on the departing David De Gea's legacy at Old Trafford, we review the signing of Mason Mount from Chelsea, ponder how United's search for a striker is going, give our thoughts on some other notable departures or potential exits, and celebrate the appointment of Bruno Fernandes as captain and a new contract for 30-goal Marcus Rashford. We'll play Guess the Player. We'll give you an extensive update on all the changes at the club's academy since the end of last season, including new managers for both the under-21s and under-18s, a new format for Premier League, two and a few significant sales, and of course we'll talk about pre-season so far as well. Plus, for our patrons whose magnificent support has continued throughout the summer, for which we are most grateful, we'll answer their questions in a bonus patron-only Q&A, which you can access too for as little as a couple of quid a month. In that section, we'll discuss Kobbie Mainoo in greater depth, Sofyan Amrabat, and loads more. Jack, after that mouthful of an intro, and before we dive into the 2023-24 season without taking a breath, your summer, how's it been? A little break from the football? Or has it been a break from the football?
It has been. It has been mainly. It feels like the first proper kind of summer off from football that we've had in quite a while, between the Euros getting delayed, the year before that, the Premier League going all the way through the summer. It's been good. Been tuning into a lot of cricket, a lot of golf, been playing a lot of golf. So yeah, it's been a lovely summer, nice little break. Enjoying the Women's World Cup now as well. I wasn't feeling that excited about getting back into football until probably the last few weeks. It happens every year. You know, you're just kind of done with it at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Especially when the end of the year was a real slog, like it was for us at the back end of last year. But now I feel ready to go again for the emotional roller coaster of supporting United.
Yeah, ready to rock and roll. You say a few weeks. I don't think I was ready until a couple of days. I think this week I'm feeling particularly chipper this afternoon, because earlier this morning, £60 was taken out of my brother's account, which you'd think would be no reason to be happy about. But it's a sign that we have tickets for the first domestic away of the season at Tottenham Hotspur, which is even more something to celebrate, because this is the first season in which we can actually apply for domestic away tickets ourselves. We've been going to European aways for a while. We've gone to a few domestic aways on the goodness of other people's hearts giving us their tickets. But this is the first season after 4 years as a season ticket holder where we can apply, and somehow we've got beginner's luck and have tickets for the first domestic away at Spurs. So, And having been at Old Trafford Cricket Ground last Sunday, when what had been just the most thrilling Ashes series was rained off in the most miserable of circumstances, the combination of the disappointment at the cricket and the excitement of this of getting a ticket for the first away of the season has swung my excitement back in football's favour, having been focused on the cricket for so long. The cricket was fun. I imagine our American listeners are a little confused. Well, not confused, but don't know what we're talking about quite so much. The Aussie listeners, on the other hand, yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, it's a funny thing trying to explain. I actually did at work a couple of months ago, I did a cricket 101 presentation to everyone at my work, and everyone came out saying nice things, but I'm sure in the back of their minds, just trying to be polite. And I'm sure in the back of all of their minds, they were still utterly confused why we watch a sport that lasts 5 days and can then just be rained off.
Yeah. For any new listeners to the podcast, Jack is Chicago based, having, as you can tell from his accent, grown up in England, has lived in America for a few years. So can always give us the insight into the peculiarities of the differences between the UK, the Brits, and the Americans.
And now a chance to watch Lionel Messi play in the MLS.
I mean, I imagine there is a ridiculous amount of talk about that.
There is, yeah. And I've been to a couple of games. The Chicago MLS team is not very good. Chicago Fire, although they're doing all right this season compared to normal. Normally, you can get last minute tickets for like $20 because they're not very good, and the stadium gets nowhere near sold out. It's about $250 for the Inter Miami game in October.
Wow, wow! You can tell I'm in cricket mode because when he said Chicago Fire, I thought, oh, that sounds like one of the kind of shite names
for
that
you get
in cricket. Yeah, for the 100. Yeah, yeah. Let's turn focus to United. And there's no bigger change at MUFC this summer than between the sticks, Cameroonian international Andre Onana has joined from Inter. 41 appearances for Inter Milan last season, 19 clean sheets with a particularly impressive performance despite defeat in that Champions League final against Manchester City. Or so people say, because I didn't watch that game deliberately. Jack, did you watch that game?
I was at a wedding, so the decision was taken out of my hands. So no, I did not watch it, but I have seen a myriad of clips from Onana's performance in the Champions League final going on social media, which has been lovely.
Yeah, yeah. I managed to avoid watching most of it, but because it was a mate's birthday, I had to go out. Believe it or not, I genuinely had to go out in Manchester City Centre that night, and it was a difficult experience. Although, by the end of it, because of my interactions with various Blues, who somehow seemed grumpy despite just winning the treble, it cheered me up and made me think, yeah, well, it's just not the same, is it? Anyway, Onana, it's probably the biggest change in United's team for many, many years. I think bringing Casemiro in was such a transformational signing, but this is probably going to be more, isn't it? Or that's at least Eric's hope, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think Casemiro was transformational in the sense that he increased the level of our midfield by a massive, massive degree, but I don't think he was transformational necessarily in the way that we will approach games and the way that tactically we're going to set up. Onana, I think partially because he's a very skilled player and partially because of just how different he is to the man he's replacing in David De Gea, has a chance to be the most transformational signing that United have made in, certainly since Sir Alex Ferguson left and quite possibly since potentially Cristiano Ronaldo and Wayne Rooney were signed back in the mid-2000s. I mean, doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be the best signing. You know, he could come in and make a boatload of mistakes in his first 6 months, but I think he will play a massive, massive role in changing the way that this United team play. And I think that is something to be excited for, if nothing else, to start this season. I think we're going to see a much more controlled United team in possession.
It feels like in the modern game, the changing of the guard with respect to the goalkeeper is such a marker of a team's transition or a team's journey towards the top. And we've seen it with Liverpool and Manchester City. I think we've seen it with Arsenal as well. And this seems like just a very good moment in Ten Hag's transitioning of United into a top team, doesn't it?
It does. And United, more than most other teams, have quite a long history of having very long-serving goalkeepers. You know, you can really, back to the early to mid-90s, United have really gone through that whole period with three goalkeepers probably spending 85% of that span. Really, the only gap there is from Schmeichel to Van der Sar. And so it is a massive, massive change for United of all teams to undergo a goalkeeper change. Onana's coming in, you know, obviously a lot older than De Gea was when he joined us, so probably not going to be staying for 12 years, but this definitely isn't the kind of signing where you think, well, yeah, he could be a starter for 3 or 4 years. The goal here is clearly for Onana to be the long-term option for United in goal, and I think more so than what it was when it was Van der Sar going to De Gea, it just signals such a shift in the style of goalkeeper that Manchester United are going to be playing.
Yeah, let's talk a bit about that style, because when you look back and think about Liverpool and City's kind of transformation in their goalkeeping department, when they, I mean, City's was strange because they kind of got bad versions of Edison before they settled on Edison. Like, I remember going to watch the derby at Old Trafford, and it must have been September 2016, and we just signed Zlatan and Pogba, and Claudio Bravo made this horrendous mistake, and Ibrahimovic capitalised on it. And that's kind of, they then eventually found their man, and he's been so good for them, in the same way that Alisson has for Liverpool, and that we hope Onana will be to United. I expect there'll be mistakes and heart-in-mouth moments, but I also expect to see such a big benefit to the team overall. And it's really strange as a fan knowing that I'm going to go into my seat next season and have to like adjust my mentality to a new style of play. Team-wise, but goalkeepers is the most obvious one. And we'll see kind of Onana trying to, I mean, let's talk about on the ball first. He's a better distributor. He's a better passer of the ball. He's so much more confident on it. He's got the confidence to try and kind of suck players in to generate the space in midfield where I expect United will start pushing centre-backs into as well. And at times that will be tough to watch, but it's modern football and Ten Hag is of the kind of coaching group that dominates world football at the moment where it believes the reward for that outweighs the risks. In possession, it's just clear as day. The difference that he'll have on United's team, but also his starting position, as in being a bit of a sweeper keeper, not in the same way as Manuel Neuer, but kind of more than De Gea, maybe a halfway point between that. And that means that United can play higher up as well and makes for less of those instances where we've been caught out with a high line of defence and then the team can waltz through, which we've seen quite a lot of the last few years, even predating Ten Hag.
Yeah, and on there is this whole trend in world football of goalkeepers being more comfortable with the ball at their feet, effectively using them as an additional, maybe not an additional outfield player, that's probably a bit too strong, but certainly an additional option to pick up the ball, to receive the ball, to be part of build up in deep phases of play. You know, Man City are probably the biggest exponent of that in England with Edison, who is, you know, as comfortable on the ball as any of Man City's defenders, really. And I think just watching United so much last season, especially in the games when we were trying to kind of implement this more kind of comfortable in possession, playing out from the back kind of style, which we sort of flitted in and out of actually using. At times we went a bit more pragmatic and De Gea was told to go long. But when we did try and really build up from the back, it was very, very clear that A, the players didn't really trust De Gea that much, and B, that even when we did manage to use De Gea, he didn't really trust himself fully. And that meant that we looked very disjointed. We simply just had one fewer option. It's going to sound silly and so simple, but having an extra player available to receive the ball makes it so much more difficult for an opposition team to defend against you, especially if they are trying to, you know, put pressure on higher up the pitch. And then two things that really stand out to me from Onana that I think makes him slightly different to even the more kind of traditional modern goalkeepers. It sounds like a bit of an oxymoron, a traditional modern goalkeeper, but the sort of archetype of this modern goalkeeper that is very comfortable with the ball on their feet and takes part in build up from deep areas on the pitch. And those two things for me are, one, Onana's movement, which sounds odd saying that about a goalkeeper, but he has a great awareness and understanding of where he needs to be able to make himself a useful option for whoever is on the ball, whether that is side to side, and he's very willing to kind of go out of his box towards the corner flags to give someone a better angle for a pass if the back pass towards the centre of the goal is being cut off. And then also his willingness to step out. I mean, again, I mentioned I didn't watch any of the Champions League final on the day. I've since watched plenty of clips of Onana, not just of that game, but also in other games at Inter. And the one thing that really stood out to me is his willingness to step out when he's on the ball. I mean, there's plenty of times where he ends up more advanced than the two centre-backs. Now, I don't know if United will exactly go down that route straight away, but it just signals to me a willingness from Onana to be very proactive and not just think, well, you know, I'll stay in my six-yard box and the players can pass me the ball if they need to.
Yeah, I think considering how United will use it and quite how far Ten Hag will go with it, you think Martinez is used to this already. Varane is used to possibly not quite as much, but I think is a player ready to play with this kind of goalkeeper. Luke Shaw has had it a bit with England, where England used Pickford quite a lot. Wan-Bissaka and Dalot are probably the least kind of ready or proven to be good with a goalkeeper like this, but I think that will come. So I'm pretty confident on that point. I think what I'm also really pleased about is the kind of reviews of Onana that I've read from like people I trust and the kind of key stats. Like is that in recent years, and we'll talk about De Gea in a second, but in recent years, De Gea's basics have declined as well. And that's been the kind of the key problem, where at one point the reward for him was outweighing the negative of having him in your team was outweighing the negative, where you thought, oh, there's like, he's not quite so good with his feet. And that has stopped. Like, our errors leading to shots and goals in all competitions last year, De Gea 6 errors leading to shots, 4 to goals, Onana none of each. Onana's like saves per 90 minutes are higher, his save percentage is higher, his goals prevented is higher. Those are like the basics of being a goalkeeper. And that's what's pleased me, is that it's an upgrade in that department, as well as all of this, all of like his ability on with the ball. The only kind of statistic where De Gea beats him in is like the ones to do with kind of reflex saves, so saves in the box and save percentage in the box. They shine through statistically just as they do with the eye test, but that's about it. And it's such a massive upgrade. And United have one of the best goalkeepers in the league for what I think is a very reasonable price as well, at a good age, and someone who's clearly, from what he said and all the reports we saw, is so eager for this opportunity, and it's brilliant.
I think that's, I mean, we'll talk about Mount and potentially Hoyland as well, but I think that's been a theme of all of the targets and two of the signings that United have made this summer, is that there does seem to be this real urgency and real desire to join United, even at times over other options. Obviously, it's kind of easy to put that out into the world
after they've
signed.
We aren't
kind of privy to, exactly, we aren't kind of privy to how they actually feel, but I think that has been a marked shift from previous years. There hasn't been any wavering at all from any of the players that United are going after.
The speed of it.
Yeah, yeah.
To have Onana and Mount for the start of pre-season, Onana's not played yet, as at the time of recording, United play Real Madrid, I don't know how many hours after we record, probably 10, and it maybe he'll be involved there. But to have them for pre-season is kind of what we've been asking for about a decade, and we've never really had them. We had that one summer where we had Damian Schweinsteiger and Schneiderlin, and that was great, and Memphis. And to be fair, that did help. We started the season okay. But other than that, it's been all too rare. Too many deadline day signings, too many late August signings.
And I think you've got to give Ten Hag and Richard Mertel or whoever else has been kind of involved in planning these transfer targets out, I think you've got to give them credit for being able to identify who we need, go out and get them so quickly. But also, I think United have managed the limited budget that I think we all know that we're operating under relatively well. I think, you know, we made a very quick decision, it seemed like, to not go after Harry Kane, which we've stuck to, even as Spurs are kind of putting out feelers over the last few days, it seems like, to kind of say, you know, Harry Kane is probably for sale as they look to drive up the price for that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was a good decision. Obviously, the De Gea situation was messy, but I think ultimately has probably ended up with the right decision. You know, Mount was a target that we've heard about for months, even Hoyland as well. So it does seem like there is a bit more foresight, a bit more planning, and some clearer kind of guidelines, I guess, that are being set at United for the kind of players that we want to bring in, and going out and getting them done quickly, but without being fleeced.
Yep, good so far. I'll reserve my final judgment until it's all done, as is normal.
I feel sort of similarly to how I did last season at this point in the transfer window, in that I don't have any problems at all with what we've done so far. We just need more.
Yeah. Final thing on Onana is, character-wise, we said like eager to join United, but also I was comforted. Yep, Stan did an interview where he spoke about him a little bit. Obviously, Stam's connection with Ajax, he was under 23's manager while Onana was there, and Yap Stam says he has the character to fit in at United, and if Yap Stam says it, then I believe it. I also read a bit about Onana's foundation, named after like the Andre Onana Foundation, which does pretty amazing work back in Cameroon, and was set up in 2016 when he was just at the start of his career, and it's normally a good sign. But yeah, like some amazing work. So yeah, I look forward to learning more about him and seeing him play. On that note, I will miss seeing, well, I won't miss the stress of the last couple of years when the ball's been at his feet, but I will miss David De Gea.
Oh yeah, I mean, how can you not? He is a bona fide United legend, without a shadow of a doubt. Someone who came in really at a time of a little bit of a transition for United after winning the Champions League, getting to a couple more finals. And then Van der Sar left, and Ronaldo had left, and it felt like potentially the end of an era. And he, along with a few other players like Rooney, Ferdinand, Vidic, Giggs, Scholes, kind of kept the good times flowing. And then he's been the absolute standout amongst a pile of absolute. you can fill in the blank on what word I'm going to use there.
Yeah.
But he, really the only failure is that we haven't surrounded him with better teams. Obviously, I think it's fair enough to say this may have come a year or two too late that he's moving on, and his career has definitely been managed poorly from a United point of view. But, you know, I mean, I was just trying to think the day that it was formally announced that he was going to leave, you almost don't want to think about some of the finishes that we could have had without De Gea in goal. I mean, some of these seasons where we were finishing sixth and seventh could easily have been bottom half or close to bottom half finishes if it wasn't for him.
Yeah. There were seasons where he did things that few goalkeepers have done and performed at such a high level that, like, the Premier League hasn't really seen with goalkeepers. A goalkeeper's rarely dominated a team in the way that De Gea did that United team, where week in, week out, we'd be getting Man of the Match awards, where he had four consecutive Player of the Year awards. It's ridiculous. And as a sign, it illuminates everything. His quality, the lack of quality in the rest of the team. It does that in tandem. A brilliant, brilliant servant.
Normally, a top goalkeeper is almost a slightly strange position because they don't actually face that many shots, assuming that they're in a top team, which they, you know, normally are if they're that good. And I think what's been so strange about De Gea is that he has more iconic moments and games, I would say, than most great goalkeepers, partially because of how bad United have been and how many shots we've kind of forced him to face. I mean, games like that 3-1 win at the Emirates in 2017, where it 14 saves, I think he made. But most goalkeepers don't have performances like that because they simply don't face that volume of shots. And, you know, I think that's kind of a unique thing in De Gea's career. He's been asked to do so much because of how bad the team in front of him has been for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And he's stood up and you know, faced that barrage of shots that he's been getting. He's, for the vast majority of his United career, been an incredible, incredible shot stopper and one that we really, really would have been just in absolute dire straits without.
Yeah. He tried to adapt as well. He attempted more passes per game last season than any other season in his career, completed more passes per game than any other season. But it felt like after that, it just hardly believable 17-18 season where he was brilliant. There was a big drop after that 2018 World Cup mistake. It felt like the decline began there, with some notable exceptions, but it felt like the general decline began there and the mistakes returned as they did, as they were there in the early 2010s, and the lack of ability with his feet became clearer, even though he did improve over the course of last season. So, yeah. And again, he kind of felt like he was going on an upward curve a little bit, and then there was that severe game, and for the rest of the season, it just got worse and worse. So, yeah. I think we gave credit to, in terms of signing Onana, and we'll give credit in terms of signing Mount as well. But I think the way that was handled was, I understand it because I don't think they wanted to commit to anything until they knew they had the new goalkeeper lined up for a decent price. And maybe if we'd announced that De Gea had gone, then we would have had to pay more for goalkeeper because people would know we were desperate. But the ideal world would have seen De Gea get a proper Old Trafford send-off in the final game of the season. And it was a shame that didn't happen.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Let's have our first guess the player clue of the season. It's me. We never rounded up the scores from last season, but we're going to do it every week this season, so we'll keep a better track. I'm setting the clue for you this week, if you're ready to go. And it's a fairly simple one to begin with. I'm an FA Youth Cup and Champions League winner currently playing for Manchester United. I'm an FA Youth Cup and Champions League winner currently playing for Manchester United.
Well, I...
And I'll let you mull that over.
I was going to say, I think I know it, but...
Move on.
I will text you the name so you know that I'm guessing after one, but we will have more clues.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about Mason Mount, and we're going to kind of feed off a question from one of our patrons, Reed Blazer, who says, what do you think Mount's role will be in United's midfield? So we'll come back to that. But in terms of the Mount deal in general, it took some time to get done. It probably cost a bit more than what United wanted. Why it did, we can't speculate. But he's a clear upgrade to the squad, a regularly available, a tactically versatile, technical quality, really hard work ethic, a similar character to his now teammates, the relationships with a few players already there. Maybe it cost a little bit more than fans might have wanted to see it cost, but I don't think anyone will remember that or think about it in a few months when he's been the success that I expect him to be.
Yeah, I think if you just said, you know, if you just say in a vacuum £50 million for Mason Mount, I don't think that sounds like an extortionate amount of money whatsoever for how much he's done at Chelsea, you know, player with a lot of Premier League experience, but still only 24 with the tactical kind of versatility that he provides. I don't think that is too much money. It's really just the fact that he only has a year left on his contract. And obviously you would hope that that would mean that the deal could be cheaper. Chelsea are known for driving incredibly hard bargains when they sell players. And obviously when you're selling to a direct rival in the Premier League, you're always expecting to pay a little bit of a premium. But I think it's a signing that makes a lot of sense for United. I think, especially like we said, just that, I think the biggest thing that he provides is that versatility, the ability to play multiple roles and also to play multiple roles kind of within the same game. And he has a skill set that can be, you know, molded. Every single coach that has gone to Chelsea, and those are, you know, wildly different coaches that Chelsea have had over the last 3 or 4 years, have all liked having Mason Mount in their squad without exception. So,
yeah, and just on that, not necessarily Chelsea's most talented player, but Chelsea's best player over the last few seasons. More goals, more assists, more appearances, like absolutely the key, the most consistently key player at Chelsea for seasons. So to be signing a rival's key player, I feel like it should feel better than it did when we completed the signing.
Yeah, I think it's a slightly strange one, like because he was coming off not the best season, although Chelsea's entire team were obviously coming off a pretty terrible season. And then I think whenever a direct rival in the Premier League is selling one of their, like I said, maybe not their most talented, but one of their better players, I think you always have to have a little bit of a question mark about, you know, why are they doing this? Why are they willing to sell? But I think in Chelsea's case, it seems like that was coming more from the player than from the club, because he felt he was being messed around by Chelsea. You know, I think it is a slightly strange situation to be getting a player 24 years old from Chelsea, you know, in kind of the prime of his career. But like I said, it seems like the situation has been more driven by Mount than it has by Chelsea, which is a good thing for United.
Yeah. In terms of what he's going to be key for at United, you mentioned the versatility earlier, but it's also, if you're thinking about Onana at the back, it's nice to be able to think about like Ten Hag fitting these pieces into the puzzle. In fact, I'd be surprised if that's not like a United we stand cover soon enough. Maybe even for the summer. Well, I haven't seen it yet, so I'm sorry, Andy, if I've ruined it, but you haven't sent it to me yet anyway. So, but Onana, you've got kind of that on the ball quality from the back, and also that higher starting position as a goalkeeper, which means United can play further forward. Also allowing you to play more aggressively forward is Mason Mount, who has led the press for England at international level, senior international level, but also throughout the youth levels when I watched him there, has led it for Chelsea. And as you say, has been trusted by all of those managers, Chelsea and England, to do so. And to have that leadership quality, not necessarily in kind of like standards. You wouldn't call him a leader in the same way that you might call like Martinez and Casemiro, but that intelligence that he can lead the rest of the team in United's press is, I imagine, one of the key things for Ten Hag. And we can talk about his on that quality on the ball, but strangely for someone who kind of shone in youth football because of his on the ball quality, it's that off the ball work ethic and intelligence and leadership that's probably made Ten Hag give Chelsea 50 million for him.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it. I think his ability to just come in, play multiple roles, but also help United, again, similar with the Onana signing, be a more dominant, controlled team in possession. I think that really is the biggest thing. You know, I think that Mount's signing will signal a bit of a shift from United in the way that we are going to set up when we do have possession. Last season, you know, if you kind of take the midfield trio of Eriksen, Casemiro and Bruno Fernandes, I think we all kind of expect that Mount will slot in instead of Eriksen. Eriksen, I'm sure, will still play a significant amount, but probably won't be starting every week. And the way that we would often play, especially when we were in kind of controlled possession phases of the game, we'd often have Eriksen being the deepest of those midfielders, being kind of the first player to receive the ball from the back. Casemiro would push up a little bit more, and Bruno Fernandes would obviously play his traditional kind of number 10 role. I don't expect Mount, despite the fact that he would likely be coming in for Eriksen, I don't expect him to be playing that exact same role. I don't see Mount being a player who's going to be asked to drop in deeper than Casemiro, be that first receiver from the defence. I think what you're probably going to be more likely to see is a couple of things. One is probably Casemiro being asked to take a little bit more responsibility for that role, which I'm okay with, but I don't think is his best attribute. But I think the other thing is you're probably going to see United commit more and more to pushing a fullback inside. And that would probably be Luke Shaw, just given the qualities of the fullbacks that we have. Shaw is the big one.
You've also got Martinez. So what you're likely to see is United will normally have three defenders at the back, and that will be the right back. Well, sometimes the right back will go forward, but generally one of Shaw, Martinez will push into midfield, and whoever the other one cover the other one. So you're looking at that three, and then you've got the Casemiro kind of as the one, and this is what we start to see in pre-season that we're going to talk about later, but let's dive straight into it now. I'm loath to take too many conclusions from pre-season, but kind of the key points so far have been that kind of aggressive high press and then that lone midfielder left behind a front six. So you've got the three at the back, and then the six is made up of one fullback who's pushed up, the right winger, left winger, striker, and the two midfielders. And then you've obviously got the flexibility where sometimes you've seen Mount drop back in, so it's become kind of like it's not a formation, but just in terms of in that particular moment, it becomes like a 3-2-5, or sometimes you've had the 3-3-4 or something. But in general, you've got that one pushing up, so you've got a three-man defence, a lone midfielder, and then six that kind of arrange themselves in a depending on what the opposition are doing.
Yeah, and it's been a really consistent theme. I mean, you said you were loath to take conclusions away from pre-season, but you're forgetting the golden rule of pre-season, which is that everything counts if you're winning, and it doesn't matter if you're losing. You know,
we've won
three wins, no goals conceded. We're winning the league, mate. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I watched the United Arsenal game. I was in for any South Manchester residents, if you haven't been to the station in Didsbury, it's my favourite pub. Anyway, I was in there. It's a lovely little Irish pub with like a really narrow kind of corridor entrance where the bar is, which is really tight, and then a nice back room and a little outdoor bit on the street. And I was in there, does a wonderful Guinness, and I was with my mate who's an Arsenal fan who I'm living with. And we were planning to go back home and watch United Arsenal like 10 p.m. on a Saturday night for us in the UK, get a few beers, a bit of food, and like have a slightly different but kind of enjoyable Saturday night. And 20 minutes before, we were just about to leave the pub to go back, and station put MUTV on. So it was this really weird experience of watching a United match at 10 p.m. on a Saturday in the pub, which I guess is much more normal to overseas fans, wherever it may be. But it was pretty fun. And when you said, Arsenal fans are kind of going, nothing matters because it's pre-season. And I was like, it was quite good performance, wasn't it?
And I'm sure we would have felt the exact same if we had been on the end of that scoreline as well. But I think...
Well, I mean, the truth is none of the results matter, but you can take the conclusions of like how... Because Reed's other question is, how do you expect our style of play to change next season? And this is kind of what we're talking about, that much more front-footed, but also kind of front-heavy United team, trusting those at the backs. So that's why you can trust Anani, you can trust Martinez, you can trust Varane, you can trust Shaw, trusting those few at the back and putting much more emphasis on the front six.
Yeah, and that, this is it's a kind of rough shape in possession that Ten Hag used at Ajax too, with getting, a lot of bodies into that kind of front line and then relying on a lot of fluidity, a lot of dynamic movement among that line of, whether it's five or six. You know, that 3-1-6 shape, one of the potential downsides of it. I remember this is something that we struggled with a lot under Mourinho at times. We'd end up with four or five players all kind of on the line of the defence, but there would be no movement between any of them. And it would just be, they're all kind of standing in a line, not really offering any options. And I think that is the potential downside of this, is that you can end up kind of crowding the space. And I think the big thing for Ten Hag this season, and we've seen it a little bit in pre-season, is just developing those relationships between all the players that will be in those kind of positions, trying to make United a much more fluid operation in attack.
Yeah, Mount's so positive for that though, because
100%.
From what we've seen at Chelsea, particularly out of those front six, like Rashford did the clips from his interview on the overlap are starting to come out, and he talks about getting frustrated and dropping back to just get a touch of the ball, which is something we've all seen. So Rashford's one of those who'll come back in, but when he drops deep, it's not really with much value because of the type of player he is. Fernandes will drop deep, but can be a little sometimes too risky in possession.
He'll provide value over the course of a season, but there can be games when he's given it away 10 times out of 10.
And then other players like Antony and Garnacho, you don't really, when they're going to drop back, if it's getting all a bit stagnant, when they drop back, you're not expecting them to provide huge amounts of value. When they do, it's just to kind of change things up. But when Mount drops back out of that kind of forward front six position, then it's really kind of the right balance of a little bit less risky than Fernandez, maybe even a bit more cautious than Eriksen in possession, but someone who will keep those things ticking and can provide a bit of creativity. So the more I talk about it, the more I'm won round by how good a signing it is.
Well, and that I think is where the difference that he will provide versus Eriksen is going to be massive, because Eriksen was brilliant last season. I think ended up having a much more pivotal role in this team than we ever expected. But I think the difference with Mount is that in him, we have a player, you know, if we're going to, it seems like in possession, we are going to stick to this sort of 3-1-6 rough kind of shape of our team. And that's going to put a lot of responsibility on one of those players in that six to more effectively, if we aren't making any headway through a team that's sitting relatively deep, to be able to help us unlock that. And in Mount, you have a player who is almost equally as comfortable being anywhere on the pitch as deep as like a deep-ish number eight all the way to like a second striker. So I think you'll see Mount do things as different as dropping in to become the first receiver from those three at the back, as we've seen at times this preseason. Like you mentioned, at times it's gone to sort of a 3-2-5 kind of shape. But I think you'll also see Mount at various times be the player making those late runs into the box, which is, you know, been very, very good at Chelsea, whether that's from crosses or to receive through balls. You know, that is also, I think he's very, very good at. I think one of Mount's key strengths is that he's very good at finding pockets of space, and his movement off the ball is very good. So just that.
Yeah, spreading out the goals a bit more.
Yeah, but it's not, I think when we talk about Mount's versatility, it's not necessarily that every week he's going to be asked to line up in a different position. I don't think it's that he's going to be a number eight one week and then a number 10 another week, like, and then playing on the left. It's like you said, it's responding to whatever we need in a game. And I think from attack to attack, you could see Mount picking up really, really different positions.
You know what else it is? Here's my lukewarm take. it's not like controversial, so I don't know what you call it when it's not controversial, but he's a 90 minute player.
For
the whole of last season we had a 60 minute player in our midfield, and that proved the problem. And Mount's a 90 minute player, so I think that's
and Casemiro, who is generally a 90 minute player, his legs often do go at the end of games, and Mount's energy there will be really, really key. Because if at times when Eriksen did play some 90 minutes, if we ended the game with him and Casemiro in that midfield, I mean, we were just getting bypassed very, very easily.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting, because he's clearly not he's not like Frankie de Jong. And so it's interesting, it'll be intriguing to see, like, kind of exactly what Ten Hag's going to do with this midfield. Because you were talking about Mount dropping deep to receive the ball. He's not like a world-class ball carrier in the same way that you might expect like de Jong to be, where they're just those midfielders like Iniesta, who are so good at dribbling with the ball forwards in tight spaces. I don't think Mason Mount is that. So it'd be interesting to see how kind of Ten Hag shifts a little bit from his Ajax tactics to do this. But in general,
and this is, you're spot on. And I think that's why, well, a couple of things. Firstly, why I was a little bit confused when I first saw the links to Mount, because in your head, you sort of go, well, he's an attacking midfielder. We already have Bruno Fernandes. And it was like, why are we going to spend, you know, £50 million on a player who's going to be primarily a backup? But I think that doesn't quite do justice to how much Mount can do. And I've sort of, the more that I've kind of thought about the signing, the more that, I guess you could say this is me trying to convince myself, but I think the more you can see how he fits into this team. But also the second point is, it is a departure, like you said, you're absolutely right, from that profile of a De Jong or even an Eriksen type midfielder. And I think that's why I'm expecting United to play with Shaw going into midfield much more than we currently do, and kind of have this, whether it's a 3-1-6 or 3-2-5 kind of shape, because I think Ten Hag knows that Casemiro cannot probably be relied upon to be the player with the sole responsibility of kind of playing in that role where he is the deepest midfielder who we are reliant on to get us moving up the pitch. I think you'll probably see that three take on more responsibility for progressing the ball, and then Casemiro be there kind of as an additional option and ready to snuff out counter-attacks.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to get a bit of a move on. We were going to talk about strikers a bit, but I think we should leave that for our next episode and see if there's any movement on that. We're going to talk a little bit about them in a Patreon Q&A, but there's so much else to talk about in this first episode back, including departures. Anthony Elanga, his reportedly about 15 million move to Nottingham Forest now completed. It's a straight like 50 plus apps for United, an important Champions League goal, a great song. He worked very hard, did some influential performances, and he generated 15 million quid. It's kind of what the academy is for. It's a good move for everyone involved. I think maybe fans would have hoped for a little bit more from his sale. I think I did. I think the kind view of that is that United are recovering their like sales reputation. You spoke about Chelsea being really good at getting big fees, and they are, and United aren't. Maybe in a couple of years we'll be able to start doing that ourselves. That's the kind view. I'll buy into that kind view for now until I see evidence to the contrary. But there will be quite a lot of departures. We've seen a lot of departures of youth players, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But there's other people like Maguire as well. What do you think is going to happen with Maguire?
Well, it seems like the main interest in him is coming from West Ham, who seem to really be struggling to sign players because everyone knows that they have money. So they're getting priced out of every deal. I mean, they're also supposedly interested in McTominay, and we've quoted them £45 million, which seems extortionate, which is good from United's point of view. Like that's the kind of way we should be going into these negotiations. I think one of Maguire and McTominay will leave. I'd be surprised if they both leave. On the Maguire front, he seems happier than I expected, even with the captaincy gone, to stay at United. And obviously, it's obviously what we're just reading into what we see kind of publicly, but I expected to see more stories throughout the summer about, you know, how discontented he is and how the fact that he wants to leave and make sure he can protect his you know, place for the Euros next year by playing regular first team football. And we just haven't really.
To be fair, that's never really been his tactic, has it?
No, it hasn't. But there were some signs towards the end of last season, like some interviews, I think I mentioned them towards the end of the season about, you know, he made it very public that he knew about the fact that he hadn't lost a game when he was playing for, you know, 25 games until we lost to Sevilla and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. There were little moments where it felt like Maguire was trying to sort of push his own PR. And especially now that the captaincy is gone, I kind of expected the floodgates to open in that regard, and they haven't.
Yeah. I mean, it was obviously written by, like they all are, written by his team rather than him personally. But regardless of who did it, I thought his like Instagram and Twitter post after the captaincy was removed from him was hit the perfect sentiment. And I admired that. I'm sure we'll talk more about that. Yeah. I mean, I'd be very happy with him staying. He'd be a fantastic backup centre back, and we're going to need it because Varane will undoubtedly get injured at some point. So, and Lindelof is the same. I'm surprised there's been nothing on that yet. I thought Lindelof might be looking for a move away, but maybe he thinks he's having impressed at the end of last season. He's kind of cemented that third spot, and maybe is happy with that. But while on the subject of the captaincy, let's talk about the new captain, a natural choice, Bruno Fernandes. I think it was positive that there were kind of other candidates and people were debating about this, like Martinez and Casemiro or Varane. But I think the fact that Fernandes is ever present makes him the clear choice. You must be happy with it.
Yeah, 100%. I think, to be honest, I think we've all felt that Fernandes has been United captain for the last two or three years. I think it's been clear that he is captain material from very, very soon after he joined the club. And it was sort of a matter of time, it felt like. And he is the obvious choice. Like you said just then, I think we spoke a lot last season about how players like Varane, Martinez, Casemiro really did kind of transform the mentality of this United team. And Fernandes is part of that group, and obviously just wasn't kind of able to do it to the same extent when it was just him. But I think Fernandes, even out of that group, is the obvious choice, just as someone who's been at the club for longer, has been the absolute main man in this team for, you know, three or four years, seasons at this point. And I can't think of a more deserving United captain. And he's someone that will represent the club in the right way. He gets the club, even going back to the Ronaldo situation at the start of the season, you know, telling Ronaldo to go and clap the away fans after a couple of bad defeats. Just little things like this, he understands what it takes, I think, to be a United player. And on the pitch, He's also incredibly annoying at times for opposition fans to see, I'm sure, but very good at influencing referees, which is a very underrated job of a captain, I think.
Yeah. I think though the concerns are like on the pitch are, and I agree with everything he said, but the concerns are like, oh, he's too moany on the pitch. And I have at times, especially last season, thought that was pretty poor. But I think he acts better in that sense when he's captain, and he'll continue to do so. And yeah, you're right. He throws himself into every game. He throws himself to everything MUFC, like off the pitch as well, with the foundation and with the supporters and everything about. He's just thrown himself into United, and that's brilliant and deserves to be rewarded. And yeah, he's brilliant and I love him. And just I hope that in a more well-rounded team, we'll see an even more well-rounded Bruno Fernandes as well. I hope so. Yeah, what else do we need to talk about? Lisandro Martinez being back is just lovely to see. There's loads of nice things, but we're going to go into a Patreon Q&A in a second. I think we've discussed pre-season a bit. We'll talk about it more after there's been a few more games, but we should have Guess a Player Clue 2 before we dive into our Patreon Q&A. So as a reminder, Jack, the first clue was I'm an FA Youth Cup and Champions League winner currently at Manchester United. You gave me a guess. I won't tell you whether it's correct yet. You can hear this second clue, but listeners, I know what Jack has guessed. Anyway, clue two is I've represented England at every youth level from under 16 to first team. I went on loan to a club in Western Europe before having a spell in the Championship.
All right, I don't think that's changed my guess.
Okay, we'll leave it all to mull over and we'll come back to it with the final clue.
Yeah.
After the Patreon Q&A. After the Patreon Q&A, we're going to talk a bit about that. Like, well, I'll give you an academy roundup. But for now, yeah, only for patrons. We're going to talk Kobbie Mainoo and strikers and loads of other stuff. So let's dive in.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, back from a very interesting patron Q&A. Jack, you need to head off very shortly, so we're going to wrap up. I'll do a youth roundup in a second. But first, before we do, guess the player clue three.
Yeah.
You've already guessed and sent me your guess, but I've got a final clue. The first two clues, I should remind everyone because it's been a while. The first clue was that I've won the FA Youth Cup and Champions League and I currently play for Manchester United. The second clue is I've represented England at every youth level from under 16 to first team. I went on loan to a club in Western Europe before a spell in the Championship. And the third clue is I've played three times for Manchester United. Does that upset anything?
If we're including pre-season games, then it doesn't. If it means competitive appearances, then it does.
Is there any fear in your head that I might have sent you on a red herring?
Oh yeah, it's definitely went through my head that you kind of planted a nice juicy piece of bait and I've fallen for it. But it was obviously, I know that this player doesn't have to have won either the Youth Cup or the Champions League at United.
What if?
But... Well, see, we've only won the Youth Cup once a year or so ago, and none of those players have obviously won the Champions League. Last time we won it was way back in, what was it, 2011, 2012 or something. And all of those players, even though some of them have played for United since then, none of them, I don't think, are still at the club. Pogba and Lingard were the two, and obviously both no longer here. I don't know. I think my guess was Mason Mount, and I hope that I'm right.
I've sent you on a red herring. I've been mean to start the season. The correct answer... And well done if anyone's got this and seen through the ruse, is Tom Heaton, who won the 2003 FA Youth Cup, then was in the squad. It's a little bit cheeky calling him a Champions League win, I have to say.
Well, no, because I remember
he was in Moscow.
I was going to say, now that you've said that, I remember us talking about this after the...
That's why I thought it was fair.
What was it? Was it the FA Cup or League Cup final when Maxi Kovar was there and he was with Tom Heaton and we were talking about how Heaton was there in Moscow. You know what I've done? Tom Heaton could still have been a guest in this sense, but in my head, I've thought only about like current United players. And obviously Tom Heaton is a current United player, but he just completely flew under my... Under my radar. Would Mason Mount have fit? I mean, obviously, the appearances, he hasn't made competitive appearances. Would he have fit the other two?
He fits. Yeah, exactly. That was the whole point.
He does, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when you said the second one, I was like, I think that's all right.
Yeah.
But then it's when you said the three appearances, I was sort of like, well, he's not played. He's not played competitively yet.
I thought it was the first one as a trick. And then I thought about Tom Heaton's career and thought, yeah, he went on loan to Royal Antwerp. So he went to Belgium. Mount went to Vitesse Arnhem in the Netherlands. And then they both went into the championship, Heaton with, I think it was Cardiff actually, and obviously Mount to Derby. And they both played at every England level up to senior team. So yeah, it all worked perfectly. But yeah, it was Tom Heaton. You're going to say goodbye before I do the academy roundup because you need to head. But just to clarify for everyone, we're releasing this on a Thursday morning, but throughout the season we're going to be releasing episodes on a Tuesday and Friday morning. Our next episode will be around the same time as this next week, Thursday or Friday around then, and then we'll be into our normal schedule for the season proper, which starts only in a couple of weeks, to be fair, which is exciting. But we'll tell you more about our plans. Is it? We'll tell you more about our plans in our next episode. But bye from Jack for now. Jack, if you want to tell people where they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm at UTD Tate, T-A-I-T. Enjoy listening to Harry talk about the academy and I'll chat to you all soon.
Nice one. Speaking
cheers,
of
mate.
It's taken everything in my instinct to not reply to that with, and I'm at Harry Robinson 64 after 8 years of doing exactly that. Anyway.
Cheers, ta-ra. Mate. Bye.
So Jack has dipped off. I just wanted to give a quick academy roundup. We obviously had the Wrexham game last night or the night before we recorded this, a couple of nights ago. Now that you're listening to this, United were beaten 3-1 by Wrexham with an under-21s team. Travis Binion led the team with Ten Hag's support. I thought it was interesting. He has said this before, Ten Hag, but he repeated it before this game, that he sees the under-21s as being like directly under his remit, which is quite a stark difference to what happened before he arrived. Solskjaer bought into the youth setup completely, we all know that, but that wasn't the case then. And yeah, there've been loads of changes at academy level that we should talk about. Travis Binion is the new under-21s manager, having been under-18s manager for a couple of years, winning the FA Youth Cup in that role. He was under-18s manager last season, but was also in charge of the team in the Papa John's Trophy and under-21s tournament. So it was pretty clear that this was going to happen. The old under-21s manager, Mark Dempsey, is still at the academy, obviously in development, but without a specific day-to-day coaching role. The competition that the under-21s play in has also changed a fair bit. Mainly changes you don't need to know, but basically Premier League 2 has expanded into one division instead of two. There is now no relegation, which is a positive thing for clubs like United, who have deliberately wanted to play very young teams. And I don't know whether United were one of these, but clubs who had wanted to do that and accelerate younger players' development have been concerned about the potential of relegation by doing that and affecting future cohorts playing lesser teams. It was a fair point. Other people, more traditional kind of old academy heads, will say that removing relegation removes a crucial development opportunity, but I think they're in the minority at the moment. So 26 teams in the new widened Premier League 2, which is split into a pretty confusing way that's not really necessary to know. We'll just update you on the matches as they happen throughout the season. Before the season starts, fixtures still have to come out. United do know a couple though. There's pre-season friendlies against Altrincham on the 30th of July and Chester on the 7th of August. Tickets available for that if you fancy a bit of pre-season action involving United and you don't want to pay £30 or whatever to watch a kind of rubbish team against Lens at Old Trafford. We also know our position in the Papa John's Trophy. It's a pretty fun all Greater Manchester draw actually. Salford City, Stockport County and Bolton Wanderers, a team who knocked us out last season. It should be there. I mean, there should be some brilliant away followings for those games. I'll let you know about ticket details as soon as we do. There'll be one game in August, one in September and one in October, all away from home. Staying with the under-21s, two under-21 players have signed new deals. Reece Bennett, who was the captain of the FA Youth Cup side, and Dan Gore, both have featured this season. Gore was player of the year last season for the under-21s, aged 18, and captain of the team as well. Scrappy little midfielder, great control and vision. Got sent off against Wrexham, I think a little unfairly, which is a real shame for him because it was a big opportunity to impress Ten Hag watching on. But I think Ten Hag seems to like him a lot and he's got his head screwed on and from a proper red family. Reece Bennett the same, proper red with his head screwed on, a good centre-back, good on the ball, powerful physique, captain of that Youth Cup team, ruled out pre-season with an injury, unfortunately, but Ten Hag seems to have taken a bit of a shining to him as well. Down in the under-18s, the new manager is Adam Lawrence, who was previously under-16 lead coach. He's following the same path as Travis Binion did a few years ago. There's a few new players in that team just coming up from the under-16s, but there'll be a few names you might recognise, like defender Jaden Camerson, midfielders James Scanlon, Jace Fitzgerald and Shay Lacey, and forwards Victor Moose and Gabriel Bianchieri, who all made their debuts for the under-18s last season, even when they were 14, 15 or 16. The under-18s are now competing at what was the Milk Cup, what is now Super Cup NI. They're playing Liverpool, Valencia and Hertha Berlin. The under-15s are also playing there as well. And finally, there's been a load of departures of names that people will be very familiar with and may feel some connection with, having seen them come through the academy. So Ethan Laird to Birmingham, Charlie Savage to Reading, Zidanek Bell to FC Utrecht, the same club that Bjorn Hardy's joined. Manny Norkett's gone to Nottingham Forest. Dishon Bernard and Charlie Wenders have both left. They haven't found a new club yet. Twan Zebe's gone. Eric Hanbury's gone. And United generated a bit of money from Taith Chong moving clubs as well. So academy sales have generated well over £20 million. Pounds this summer, which is one of its important roles. And it's sad to see a few of those names go. Like in my role kind of reporting on the academy, doing freelance work for United, some like really kind of positive young players who you are very hopeful for, and they always act with kind of great respect and politeness. So yeah, I wish all of them the very best in their various places. But that's all. I'm gonna have to wrap up. Thank you very much for listening to the first episode of Series 9 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast this 2023-24 season. Yeah, Jack, you can find on Twitter, who left just a few minutes ago. You can find him on Twitter at UTDTate, that's T-I-I-T. You can find me at HarryRobinson64, and you can find the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod, that's P-O-D. And I'll have a bit of a special announcement in the next episode to make, so stay tuned for that. Speak then. Goodbye.
Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.